Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour, and here we go. It is the 10th day of July 2014. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the listen live button. Of course, if you like to listen on some sort of mobile device, iDevice, smart device, whatever, we recommend the apps from either Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you'll find access to the chat room, where that's where we have a rollicking good time during the time that this program is live on the airs between 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. That, of course, is 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Time. And it's around breakfast in Sydney and around midnight in the U.K. So whenever you're listening, we hope all of us do here that you enjoy the time that you spend with us. Also at the website, you'll find the ever-present PayPal button. That is how we keep this all going. That's how we keep this on the air. And thanks to some magnificent efforts last night, we were able to get out of the hole. So this evening we have our, with just a plain old simple $150 typical day of fundraising at the Horn. And anybody who wants to jump in is more than welcome. You want to lead the pack? You want to get things started? Well, thank you very much. If you do, please feel free so to do. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, but I want to start out with a bit of somber, solemn news. I got word from our inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator and Horn Malloy Skype chat moderator, Sparky, that his father has passed away. And I want to just take a moment to thank Sparky for letting you know, and by extension for letting the Horn Family Commune congregation know. Sparky's dad, what a life well lived. He passed away peacefully at the age of 96 years old. And they were 96 good years, 96 strong years. 96 years of hard work and good life lived. And his legacy lives on in his children, who will miss him dearly, but who also had one heck of a man for a father. So our thoughts, my thoughts, and I presume yours, go out to Sparky and his extended family as they say goodbye. You are dear to us, Sparky, and we cherish you and your family. So keep Sparky and his family in your thoughts, please. Now, one of the more fascinating aspects of this program is that, for me at least, is that it has a certain amount of continuity to it. And by that I mean that issues tend to roll one into another and roll from day to day to day. And so it was that last night, we for prayer meeting Wednesday, we had a pair of horrifying stories coming out of Christianity. And in the course of today's correspondence, I received an email from a person who has direct knowledge of these kinds of horrors. And this individual sent a note with a level of with a level of analysis and detail and understanding of how and why these horrors are perpetrated that that I wanted to share with you, because it might give us some sense of understanding beyond the shock and the horror and the disgust that such conduct engenders in us. I will keep the name of the writer out of this and make it anonymous. But ponder this. After yesterday's show, I thought I would share some insight, professionally speaking. I have investigated many child and sex abuse cases, and I have seen some common themes of abuse, with special note to cases where there is religious participation or an individual that is religious. And my caveat is that abuse certainly goes on in non-religious homes and persons, but I am making note of a pattern that I have investigated, and I do make the distinction of religious folk that partake in their faith for good, and those specific individuals who adopt and act on what I call true perversion in the name of God. It is very common to see ritualized abuse, where a child is subjected to presenting their death or a death of another sibling, favorite pet, etc., by digging a grave, like yesterday's story, being buried with a symbol of the devil, or made to create a grave and then made to kill a pet and bury it. One case I investigated, a young girl was put in a box and semi-buried with snakes, as she was very afraid of snakes and was told that God would decide if she would survive, as Satan's serpents would be battling for her soul in the grave, citing biblical verses to her as they covered her body with dirt and leaves. Being put in a closet or close space is also a theme, where the child is sexually abused and then contained with religious reference to the devil or spirits that need to be exorcised. Being left for hours or days is common. Mental illness of the perpetrator is closely associated with the religious zealotry. Children are frequently beaten, tortured, sexualized in response to the perpetrator's notion that their actions will purge the devil or spirit from the body, or frequently they are told to do this in the name of the light. Bible passages can get splintered and reenacted in abuse rituals. For example, one case had the children all do chores, and to know the value of working the earth for bounty, each child would care for the farm animals only to have to then kill them. After the animal was killed, the child would be locked in a contained space with it. These children were young, ages 5 to about 8. I have a friend who was brought up in Mormon country, and a variation of this happened to her, too. She was additionally threatened that if she ever said anything to anyone, the church would come and get her in a special van, and she would be killed, as would her brothers and sisters. I mentioned before, organized religions, especially the most orthodox, are breeding grounds for abuse, as both power and control, coupled with the secrecy of the organization, is present and perpetuated. Most members will remain silent in fear of retaliation and retribution from the larger group. This dovetails beautifully to the fact that clergy, doctors, and law enforcement, military, have very large numbers of abusers, as well as high rates of domestic violence. One of the most insidious abuses is that of taking a routine act like, for example, a shower or other activity and associating it with physical or psychological abuse. Again, it is ritualized abuse, and these acts carry through an individual's life. Many sexual assault survivors have major trauma attached to water, and it is very common to see survivors have issues with showering, having water splashed on their faces, and so forth. Many incest survivors may have been forced to shower or participate in other acts that cleanse them after their perpetrator has sexualized them, and religious symbolism is frequently used and believed by the perpetrator. Cleansing, bloodletting, elimination are all used to purify. So are physical and sexual acts that are interpreted to be needed to expel the devil forces or bad spirits. On another case, a boy was forced to put his hands under a rocking chair where his uncle would rock over them while reading the Bible out loud. I've seen variations on this in a number of my cases. Religion also views and enforces children as property of the parents. Beatings are justified by biblical verse and culture. A child's compliance is also reinforced by way of religious teaching, where it is very common for children to submit to their abuse, with the perpetrator using God or Satan as reason for the physical or sexual abuse. The child is made to believe they are bad, cursed, or defective, or in many cases, the child is at fault for tempting the perpetrator. You may recall, I note editorially, the story coming out of Bob Jones University that we talked about a week or so back, where the rape victim was urged to ask forgiveness of the rapist and was queried as to what they did to tempt the rapist. Our correspondent continues, the latter, of course, is the primer for sexual abuse, namely, the child is at fault for tempting the perpetrator. And this certainly happens without the use of religion, as parents, family members, or adults believe a young child or teen is seducing them. Again, child abuse is committed by both religious and non-religious individuals. I am just making note that in the name of God, heinous acts are perpetrated on children by mentally ill and challenged individuals who interpret religious dogma in very, very sick and dangerous ways. There's plenty of sick folk who do quite nicely on their own to maim, torture, and abuse children without using religion or being brought up in a household where dangerous rituals or practices are used in the name of God or Satan. Many of these rituals are passed down in families, and that is truly, truly disturbing. Yeah, it becomes self-perpetuating. And I have no doubt that there are elements of mental illness involved in some of these. But I think we do need, and I thank our correspondent very kindly for sending this along, because it helps to understand the inexplicable, what is otherwise an inexplicable horror inflicted upon a child. I do think we, as I was saying, we need to be careful about allegations of mental illness. Primarily because there are also sane enough people who do these things. They have very bad brains. Or perhaps it was perpetrated upon them. Like I said, it self-perpetuates after a while. That is not to say that all victims of abuse will go on and be abusers. But it does often, as noted by our correspondent, have a generational quality to it. And I think it is well that we consider these things when we can, because we are in the midst of a controversy. It's a political controversy. It is a humanitarian crisis along the southern border of the United States with children, little children. with the aid of traffickers and what are they called, colloquially, coyotes, bringing children from Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, all the way north through Mexico in an attempt to reach the United States. We are capturing the children, and we are at present turning them around and trying to ship them back into the living hell from whence they came. What's worse, and I like I said, this all sort of weaves into a skein together. We often put children in crisis into religious care homes, foster homes, orphanages, what have you. Christian ranches. And so there is reason to believe that even when we attempt to deal humanely with the children of the present crisis, some percentage of them are going to wind up in the hands of religious monsters. And the hell that they escaped will be exchanged for a hell into which they are placed, if we allow them to stay. And that's a big if. Because the Obama administration is trucking them right back out. We all know about the disgusting display of inhumanity in Murrieta, California. There's another one now evolving. One town in Texas, the name does not come immediately to mind, has declared the children to simply be illegal. Yeah. Meanwhile, in Michigan, where we have abandoned Detroit, I saw a photo on Facebook today noting that we send billions of dollars in aid, for instance, to Israel, and we have nothing for Detroit. It's true. But a rumor has begun spreading that the little helpless immigrant children are going to be, some of them might be housed in Michigan. And the rumors, well, they had to do with a group of boys in a rumor that some boys would be housed in by an agency that is based in Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan. Teens would be allowed to stay up to four weeks in a town called Vassar, Michigan. They'd get medical care, essential education, and they would be kept there as their cases processed through the immigration system. So, lo and behold, the baggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters, the birchers and the libertarians and the republicans showed up carrying their don't read on me Gadsden flags. To throw a hissy at a community meeting held in at Vassar High School in Vassar, Michigan. Remember, most of them are Bible-believing, God-fearing Christians. Let's just check in. It's a very long piece of audio. Let's just check in and see what we can find out.
This evening is going to be Dan Grimshaw, and he's a candidate for the 84th district. Dan, come on.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Dan Grimshaw. I'm here to welcome you to Vassar. As a lifelong resident of this town, I grew up here, went to high school here, spent my entire career here, and have a company that is located in downtown Vassar that is based on research I do title insurance. And my job is to determine what facts are. I'm here tonight because I want to know what the facts are. Not emotion. I want to know the facts so that we make a rational decision of what we need to do. That's what we're here for. I'm not here for politics because we've had enough of that. I'm here because we need to know what's going on and let the decisions be made that are best for all of us. Thank you for coming.
Okay, rational, reasonable.
This will be beneficial for all of you, and when you leave here, you'll be able to say you know more after you've been here than when you arrived. Thank you.
Okay, off to a good start, don't you think? Let's see. Let's check in with maybe another citizen and see what's going on. Not sure who any of these people are necessarily.
Doesn't happen here.
Can we just put him in the Oval Office? Yeah.
Uh oh. Yeah. Let's.
Good idea.
Let's back up. I think we've got a winner.
Don't throw me under the bus until you hear the whole speech, okay? The United States of America was built by immigrants who yearned for freedom and who worked hard to achieve the American dream.
They're built by founders and settlers.
Founders and settlers, not colonists. No, founders and settlers, and they were here legal. Did you hear that? Yeah, that's how these things go downhill in such a hurry.
American people support legal immigration. You all support legal immigration.
Yeah.
Managed effectively, strengthens our society, preserves the safety of our citizens. The reason so many communities are confronted with the problem we're talking about today is, as Tom just spoke, the failure at the federal level to secure our borders. Don't blame it on one party, blame it on all of them. A lack of consistent...
Right, because both parties are the, you know, it's, yeah, and you hear this all the time. There's not a dime's worth of difference. Republicans and Democrats are all the same, right? Except for the fact that one group has put forward an idea on immigration reform, while the other has said, look, a squirrel. Is it martini hour yet? You can guess who's who.
Enforcement of immigration law.
Secure the borders. By golly, anytime you hear secure the borders, what do they want? Well, they want a wall. All the way around America. Fools.
And mixed messages being sent to foreign nationals regarding our immigration policy. This ain't going to be the first crisis any city's going to see in this country before it's over. We'll continue to face this crisis until action is taken in our nation's capital to secure our borders, restore the law to our immigration system, and hold the source nations accountable.
Wow, hold the source nations accountable. What's he want to do, bomb them? Maybe we could, I mean, we're talking about Central America here. Maybe we could fund some roving death squads in El Salvador like Ronnie Reagan did. Maybe we could host bases in Honduras for the training of those death squads. Maybe we could topple a government or two. Maybe Guatemala. We've done that in the past. Maybe we could pass some more free trade treaties and legislation and wipe out the campesino farming system in the region, which sends people unable to any longer sustain themselves in traditional family farming methods into the cities and from the cities toward the United States, where they can mow the lawns and swab the toilets of guys like this, while people like this piss and moan about the very existence of the people that they're paying pennies from grass mowing and toilet swabbing. Right?
The crisis that we may face, I'm not sure. It's not the fault of Vassar City. It's not the fault of Wolverine Human Services. And it's not the fault of any of our community residents. Wolverine Human Services was...
Notice the immediate expiation, is that the right word, of the community. No, they're just living in a vacuum up there in Vassar City, Michigan. They're not participating in an economy that brutalizes entire regions of the world. They're not flipping their lights on and participating in an electrical grid that blasts away mountains and digs vast holes in the ground and pumps toxins into the water table. No. They're Vassar, Michigan is Bubbleville. They're not off to Walmart to buy crap made in China by some poor pathetic human being chained to a damn table 12 hours a day without being able to sit down or take breaks. They're not participating in an economy that relies on Chinese manufacturing where 700 people die in work-related accidents every day. Oh, no! They're good, upstanding Americans! And it is not their fault. No.
The approach to provide services fitting with their overall mission during a national border crisis. And I can't fault them for responding to the request. Wolverine has been a good partner with Vassar for a long, long time. Nobody can say the different to that. And you've accepted them for 20 years, 30 years. The surrounding community has had a good relationship with them for two decades, and we should all work to ensure that that continues. Based on my inquiry with the Department of Human Services, Tom, the previous speaker may disagree with me, there are no current state contract prohibitions that would preclude Wolverine from opening the closed beds to care for their illegal immigrant juvenile population.
Illegal immigrant juvenile population. Isn't it interesting how they just can't quite bring themselves to say human beings? Maybe it's because maybe they're not just quite as human. Sheesh. And like I said, this community meeting went on for an hour. We're not going to play all of it.
The facilities would still have to be applicable to state and county health department rules. There's also nothing in existing law, state law, that prohibits or could be used to prohibit the housing of this population. As I understand it. Again, don't throw me under the bus. We really have not had an opportunity yet to hear what's coming, what they're going to do, and what's going on. That's for tonight. Although as a state legislator, I have no...
Murmur. That is some authentic Vassar, Michigan gibberish.
No direct oversight of federal agencies. Tonight, I'm urging all agencies and entities involved in this issue to work cooperatively with concerned citizens.
You know, we're talking about children here. We're not talking about some sort of army massed and ready to pour across the Rio Grande in waves of. But to hear these right wingers, you'd think it was. You'd think it was an invasion force. Oh, jeez.
Folks in my district, it's all you folks who are taxpayers, parents, grandparents, have legitimate concerns about the impact of housing these individuals. on their health, welfare, their education system, and also on the security of our community. All of us have seen TV news reports showing some of these illegal kids walking through towns, just walking through neighborhoods. No place to go, nothing to do, no one overseeing them. I hope that doesn't happen here.
Can we just put them in the Oval Office?
Score!
Can't we just put them in the Oval Office? Yeah.
Here's room there.
Good idea.
Good idea. Did you catch that? Good idea.
Good idea.
Let the speaker speak. Let the speaker speak, please.
What's it going to cost us? Remember, these are patriotic, God-fearing, upstanding Americans. What's it going to cost us? And if you've done it unto the least of these, my brethren, I say unto you, you've done it unto me. Yeah. With probably very few exceptions, everybody in that room comes from immigrant stock. But they're immigrants who adopt the philosophy of Igumfu. I got mine. F you. Maybe it's time to cue up Lee Greenwood again. Note coming in from our friend Luta. Subject line, dumbasses. Bob, I am positive that the Huron, Ojibwe, and the different Algonquin tribes wanted to see their legal paperwork that wasn't attached to a free blanket covered in smallpox or a bayonet through their baby's stomachs. But then again, what do I know? Right. One of my favorite images is the picture of the Native Americans on horseback. It's proudly fighting illegal immigration since 1492. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. Subject line, the dead colossus. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Michael says, I propose the Statue of Liberty be torn down and chunks of it used to ceremoniously reinforce a great wall on the southern border. Because, you know, F them kids. Oh, no, Devin, I ain't got it in me. If I go there now, I won't make it through the program. Devin's suggesting we bump with the anointed former Attorney General John Ashcroft singing, Let the Eagles Soar. No, I don't think we're going to be having any sore eagles on the program this evening. Marty pointing out, Bob, these kind and gentle gatherings of Americans, they represent us, the American people, in our full flower. Remember the proper voice. Gentle. Sound like you're being really sweet and helpful. But stream the sarcasm. Yeah.
I could use the money too, maybe.
I understand what you're talking about. Your dollars, whether federal or otherwise, are funding these operations. We're concerned about the criminal and health histories, foreign gang affiliations, the reasons for bringing them all the way to Michigan, and where they will ultimately end up. We'd like to know, you'd like to know, the process moving forward. We'd all like to know that if this happens, what will be the protocols in place to protect our community and address our concerns?
From roving bands of 8-year-olds. Hey, Granny, give me the popsicles. Let's see if we can. Let's find us another idiot, just for the fun of it. I don't know. Maybe these people. Maybe it's not an idiot.
Eric, I think you did a pretty good job of trying to clear things up. We were called as city councilmen to a meeting at Pioneer Work and Learn, as he said. I think it was July the 1st. And as we sat there, we were pretty much told, this is what we are going to do. We don't need any input from you. We don't need your permission. So when you demonstrate in front of City Hall, you're demonstrating at the wrong place. You should have been out at Pioneer Work and Learn, because we have nothing to say about this. They are an independent corporation funded by the state, funded by the federal government, and they told us this is what we're going to do. Now, what Derek said...
Yeah, okay. Oh, let's see. Oh, okay, I got a feeling this is going to be a winner.
Yeah. And I can contradict almost everything that Mr. McCree stated. So I'm here to tell you what those immigrants are entitled to, what they're not. Okay, I'm going to give you some facts tonight, where the funding is coming from. I know it sounds really nice what everybody said, but since when have we been able to trust the federal government? Right?
Biggest applause line so far. When have we ever been able to trust the federal government?
It's the federal government's responsibility to protect our borders, not to dump all these kids in the city's lap. The children that are involved here are only pawns. They're a game to control our nation. It's an evasion. Nothing less than an invasion.
Well, there I was a few minutes ago saying, what do they think, it's an army? Yeah, there she is. It's an invasion. Nothing less than an invasion. Oh, screw those tri-corner hats down type teabaggers. It's going to get fun.
Salvadoran government and Honduras government have placed ads in their local papers telling their young people, go to America. They're going to take care of you, and they're not going to deport you. This is an orchestrated effort between all the South American countries.
Yeah, son of a gun. El Salvador's in South America now. Wow.
This happening is also an opportunity to abuse not only the children, but us as taxpayers. If this program is allowed to proceed, it will never end. Government entities, once they create something...
Now understand, remember, please, we're talking about housing, temporarily housing some children in this community, in a facility in this community, so that they, until they can be tried in immigration court and sent the hell back. That's what these pasty-faced, doughy white people are throwing a hissy over. Are we clear on that?
They never exterminate it. It's gonna...
What? Now she wants children exterminated? Oh, no. It's just the program she wants exterminated. Okay, sorry. Just having a little moment there. A discussion, you know, when you're having a discussion about children, and the word extermination, exterminated, comes into play, it gets a little creepy real quick.
It's going to be a perpetual source of income, and for government agencies and committees in the federal government. Once additional staff are hired, those people will never be let go. They're always going to find them jobs to do and keep this going.
But I thought they wanted jobs. I thought everything was about jobs. Hey.
Wolverine says we shouldn't worry.
Yes, and the name of the human service agency is Wolverine! Oh, the goddess of irony. Oh, she's on. She has so been on her game.
Because the money is coming from the federal government. Where do they get their money from?
Right here.
Okay, I did some research, and Michigan Human Services, our funding is 30% from the state of Michigan. The other 70% comes from the federal government. This year, our Senate and our representatives voted to decrease funding for human services in the amount of 7%. And how does that make sense? They're decreasing the amount, and they're trying to force all these people on us.
Funny how she can't say children, isn't it?
Okay. There's going to be fraud in the Michigan HS. There's fraud now. Just this year in Detroit, they revoked...
Are there no normal people in Vassar, Michigan? Is it just all don't read on me flags with the stupid squirrely-eyed snake? And is that what it is? I can't take any more of this. So we'll go to print. There were lots of things said at this meeting, a meeting about children. Yeah, they had their Gadsden flags. They had their InfoWars placards. And if you check my Facebook, by the way, if you check my Facebook or my Twitter feed, I tweeted a photo shortly before airtime. I was up at the Wiggling Pig, stocking up on ramen noodles and flavor boost packets. And I pulled up to the little intersection there to turn back out onto the main road. There's a stop sign. And somebody... some bagger, some birther, some tenther, deather, booger eater, libertarian, John Bircher, Republican, had plastered a couple of stickers on the stop sign. What are they? Like I said, she's really been bringing her A game lately. Remember last night, Dana Rohrabacher, fluoride? And then, of course, we had the clip from Dr. Strangelove, Fluoride Mandrake, in Little Children's Ice Cream. Well, lo and behold, the stop sign here in this sleepy little hamlet. The stop sign's been plastered with a couple of bumper stickers. One is for InfoWars. And the other one, and I'm not sure, well, if you zoom it, you can see it. The other one is a blue bumper sticker with white lettering that says, Fluoride. There is poison in the tap water. No, right-wing dumbass. Methylchlorohexane methanol coal preparation agent. There is poison in the water. God almighty. But if you want to see the photo, it's on my Facebook page and it's on my Twitter feed, so check it out. At Bob Kincaid or Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Yeah. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Bob, sometimes I don't wonder why that Kenyan Muslim usurper in the White House has a deep-seated hatred of white people. But we haven't even gotten to the fun part. Here's some quotes from the meeting. The woman, the bleach blonde lady who was speaking last is a person by the name of Tamara Murray. And she, you heard what she had to say. A Repiglican named Tom Wassa stepped to the podium as well and said, "The housing of illegal aliens is violating U.S. laws, and President Obama is failing to uphold the Constitution and laws enacted by Congress. President Obama would be classified as a domestic terrorist. He is creating an atmosphere of fear and terror." You know what? Fear is the mind killer. Fear starts in the mind. It isn't created by Kenyan Muslim usurpers with a deep-seated hatred of white people. Nope. It had to, no. And then the gun goobers showed up. One of them, Shannon Tony, had a handgun clipped to her belt, and she said, "It's a safety and health concern. These kids could be very sick without even knowing it." Then along came another booger eater and said, "I support a minefield along the border." That was Marine Corps veteran Terry Mockney. And his idea was to put the children in prison camps. Another one showed up with a surgical mask and said, "I fear within 2 years of letting these immigrants in, these masks will become standard." And then there was, "I'm not here because I'm some redneck rube from a small town in the Michigan Thumb." That's Lou Smallwood. "I'm not here because I'm a racist. I'm not here because I'm an old white guy. I'm here because I'm concerned about the federal government, and I'm concerned for my grandchildren and their future." Of course, he was, in fact, a redneck rube from a small town in the Michigan Thumb, and he is, in fact, a racist, and he was there because he's an old cranky white guy. But what about the children who are related to me, and screw all the other children? Do you think for an instant that if these children could get away from the hells in which they live and could get to a civilized country, they would? Of course they would. Unfortunately, their best bet is the United States. So there you go. That's the country that's us. If we could just build a wall. If we could just build a wall. Everything would be okay, and Frisbees and Wheat Chex would cover the land. And happiness would reign supreme. Right? Kind of reminded me of this. Aeneas Mitchell.
"You want stars? I got a sky full. Put a quarter in the slot, you'll get an eyeful. You want the moon? Yeah, I got her too. She's right here waiting in my pay-per-view. Ooh, how long's it been? Little moonshine ain't nothing. One at a time, boys. Straight line. What the boss don't know, the boss won't mind." So this is a song from the Hadestown opera. It's a song sung by Hades, king of the underworld, and the name of the song is "Why We Build the Wall."
Fitting, right?
Children, why do we build the wall? Why do we build the wall? We build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free. How does the wall keep us free? My children, how does the wall? all keep us free? How does the wall keep us free? The wall keeps out the enemy, and we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. Who do we call the enemy? My children, who do we call the enemy? Who do we call the enemy? The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy, and we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall, we build a wall to keep us free. Because we have and they have not, my children, 'cause they want what we have got. Because we have and they have not, 'cause they want what we have got. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps all the enemy, and we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. What do we have that they should want? My children, what do we have that they should want? What do we have that they should want? We have a wall to work upon. We have work and they have none, and our work is never done. My children, and the war is never won. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy, and we build a wall to keep us free. That's why we build a wall. We build a wall to keep us free. We build a wall to keep us free.
I don't know about you, but that song gives me chills. Again, Anais Mitchell. And that particular rendition of the song that comes from the opera Hades Town, somehow I think that's a metaphor, don't you? That particular version was recorded by Dusty Wright. Dusty Wright has a series on YouTube to which you can subscribe, and if you love music, it's worth subscribing to. It's called Dusty Wright's One Takes. Just look up Dusty Wright with a W, W-R-I-G-H-T, Dusty Wright. Subscribe, and he just has a nose for great music. Yeah, it's described, Dusty Wright's One Takes are a series of live songs by artists you know, should know, or will know very soon. That, in the context of the present crisis, has anthemic qualities, do you not think? Wow. Just wow. If you go to mlive.com, you can find the Vassar, Michigan story. You can see a photograph of idiots in the parking lot walking around with signs cut out in the shape of the state of Michigan that say, "Keep us pure Michigan, Infowars.com." The stupid, it burnses us, it burnses us. And all the yahoos, it seems, the usual suspects and whatnot, are getting in on this. Note coming in from our friend Jessica. "Oh, why do I bother?" is the subject line. "And whoever welcomes a little child like this in my name welcomes me." That's Matthew 18:5. Well, that's not in their Bible. They had that part taken out because it's inconvenient. human migration is a real issue. And it is a real issue that is best understood with the long lens of history. Crisis-based or disaster-driven human migration has been the source of some of the greatest problems humanity has ever faced. But good God, from the moment when we got down to just 2,000 of us, there were around 2,000 people who later became the rest of humanity. From the moment that we were Australopithecus afarensis, Homo erectus, Homo habilis, we've been on the move. Why are we so surprised by human conduct that is at the very core of our human nature? We developed technologies. Most of our technologies we developed for the purposes of being able to move about. Look at the development of shipping from the ancient Minoan times up to 1492. It's a steady progression of shipbuilding technology that allows the ships to go further and further until they're able to finally go bobbing across the Atlantic and around the Horn of Africa. But the benighted fools say, well, put them on a bus and send them back. Yeah, one of the yahoos in Michigan volunteered, I'll drive one of them buses. I'll drive them all the way to Mexico. I'll drive them all the way to the border. Wrong accent, I know. So we're going to let them off in Mexico, which isn't their country either. Yeah, but once you cross the Rio Grande, it's all Mexico on down there, all them South American countries. The stupid will be the end of us. Note coming in from Robert in Australia, secure borders and immigration. Robert says, I have in the archive somewhere a copy of an all-black Australian comedy show from the late 1960s. There's a wonderful sketch in it. The location, Botany Bay. Two native Australians are watching Captain Cook and his team coming ashore. One turns to the other and says, you know, what this country needs is a more restrictive immigration policy. As for securing the border, did you ever see the film Monsters? I don't think so. I suppose these people want a giant 500-foot-tall, several hundred-mile-long concert wall along the southern borders, as long as they don't have to pay for it. Maybe we could let the immigrants build the wall. Robert continues and notes, for the last few decades here in Oz, we've had refugees from all those fun Middle Eastern countries that any sane person who could would get the hell out of as quickly as possible. These refugees arrive in boats via Indonesia and are thus referred to the media as boat people. Under the previous Labor government, every arrival was public knowledge. The current government keeps every arrival secret. They keep it secret because we have people here who think a few thousand people arriving this way each year is a problem. It doesn't even impact the population growth rate, which I believe is in decline. The usual statement is along the line of, we have to stop them before they overrun the country. Robert asks, have you seen a map of Australia lately? Yes. One group of refugees were offered jobs in a country town at a meatworks. They all took the jobs. Years later, they are all well established in this country town. The locals have no problem with them as their town was dying until the refugees turned up. It's all fear. Politicians live on the stuff. Make the people afraid, and they'll vote for you. By the way, it's estimated we have 60,000 people in Australia who have now overstayed their holiday visitation visas. None arrived by boat. They all flew in through various international airports. Yeah. See, when we talk about immigration, or when America talks about immigration, you have to understand they're talking about brown immigration. There are overstays all over this country. Russians, Irish, Central and Eastern European. Those are not the people the baggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters are worried about. It's the brown ones. Because at the core of all of this is the same tired, sad, sorry, old, desperate race fear that has inhabited the white soul ever since the white folks invented the concept of race in the first place. It is a Frankenstein's monster that has turned on the good doctor. Or that they fascinate themselves to think will turn on. Yeah, right. You see? Shorty in L.A. noting, what does the Statue of Liberty say about immigration? Inscription on the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Yeah, I'll lift my lamp beside the golden door, and I'm going to whack you with it if you get anywhere near the golden door. That door is golden, and you ain't going through it. Shorty says, case closed. And I agree. Hypocrisy. You know, hypocrisy. Oh, mercy me. Tim from L.A. noting, Bob, it's funny how the teabaggers blame the federal government, specifically the Democratic Party, as well as the president for the immigration issue, but never bring up the fact that the main source of the problem are the corporations where these teabaggers frequent, you know, McDog Meat, Burger King, Wally World, who hire undocumented workers but never speak about them. I remember before Reagan came to office, the only places these undocumented workers worked were farms mostly, and the people left when the season was over. If these same corporations hired the undocumented workers back then, they would end up in prison, fined, and their corporations face the corporate death penalty. I live in East L.A., and growing up, all the ma-and-pa stores, as well as the large supermarkets, especially McDog Meat and Burger King, only hired U.S. citizens. I also remember the borders. Well, there were no real borders between the between California and Mexico, much like Canada and the U.S., and I never even knew we had the INS. The only reference to immigration were the La Migra, but you never knew what they looked like. If these teabaggers truly want to end, quote, illegal, quote, immigration, go after the corporations. They do that and watch our population drop. And, of course, Tim also is cognizant of Matthew 19:14. But Jesus said, suffer the little children and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. Tim notes, where does it say, unless they're illegal? Well, it kind of doesn't. Yeshua lived in a place where migration was happening frequently and where crisis migration was happening. The whole Caesar's Gallic Wars thing started with a migratory movement. And, of course, Caesar played that for money and made a fortune out of slaughtering Gauls. Oh, well, history schmistry. Who needs history? 4 minutes past the hour. I want to mention, as we go through the program, of course, my thanks to Dwayne and Asa. Thanks to the two of them for helping us keep all of this going. Dwayne's note says, in memory of Sparky's father. Sincere condolences. Thank you, Dwayne. And so we are $120 away from meeting the evening's fundraising goal. Thank you, Asa, and thank you, Dwayne. And hopefully, somewhere along the way, you'll have some company. And we'll take care of the evening's fundraising without too much more mention of it. No, I said a few minutes ago that everybody seems to be chiming in. The old saying that I heard growing up, hey, look, another country heard from. When people began piling on an issue. And so, do you remember Pastor, Brother, Minister Robert Jeffress? of the that great big giant pile of bricks Baptist Church in Dallas. The guy who said of Bishop Willard Romney that he was a member of a cult. Yeah. Well, Robert Jeffress wants us to know that he knows the mind of Jesus Christ, and that's why they had him on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, so that he could explain to America what this immigration crisis really is all about. Yeah, this is charming.
President Obama last night not only sitting down with Texas Governor Rick Perry, who he's shaking hands with right there on the tarmac about the immigration crisis on our southern border, he also invited faith leaders to the meeting in the Dallas area yesterday.
But one prominent faith leader didn't get the invite, Pastor Robert Jeffress, because it's because of his view of the Bible says the law comes first. Pastor Jeffress joins us now. Pastor Jeffress, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
You know,
He just got to good morning. This might be a good time to stress test the duct tape and the hockey puck. I'm just saying.
Some have said that you're cold and callous and unchristian if you think these kids need to go back to where they came from.
So they can be killed or starved or beaten. Yeah, that's cold and uncaring and unchristian, just to be clear.
But at this point, I understand you think our border security is more important?
Well, I think the most compassionate thing we can do for these children is to secure the border. You know,
really? The most compassionate thing you can do for a person who is dying of thirst is to build a big fence around the pond. Yeah. Makes sense to me. Do continue, representative of the resurrected Christ who blesses us with grace and salvation and eternal life, and urges everyone to love each other. Do, Bob, continue.
Well, here in Texas, we have what we call the attractive nuisance laws. And it basically says if you're a homeowner with a swimming pool that doesn't have a fence around it and a neighborhood child wanders in and drowns, you're liable because you have enticed that child into a dangerous situation. The remedy is to build a fence, not only to protect yourself from a lawsuit.
I swear I had no idea that he was going to go swimming pool on me when I mentioned building a fence around the pond. I promise. Ooh, wee, you. That's me, the human theremin.
But to protect the child from danger. And what we're doing by having these unsecured borders, we are enticing children and mothers to make this dangerous journey. Our Attorney General, Greg Abbott, was talking to me this weekend. He said that hundreds of these children and mothers are dying. Many are being raped, all because we have not secured our borders.
Really? It's because we haven't secured our borders that that's happening. Now, this is one of those cause and effect arguments that philosophers can get into. So we have an allegedly unsecured border, oddly enough, and you can see it on my Facebook page. I saw a photograph the other day of a U.S. Border Patrol agent examining the papers of an 8-year-old child with skin the approximate color of copper, and the notation that the child would be sent back. But it's our border that's the attractive nuisance, that's the problem here. It has nothing to do with wrecked economies and vicious warfare and globalization and destruction of means of sustenance and the United States' support for nasty, ugly little authoritarian dictatorships or anything like that. Oh, hell no. It has nothing to do with the war on drugs. No, nothing. It has nothing to do with the prohibition here that has created massive drug cartels in the south of our border that feeds the hungry, voracious, ravenous appetite of the American population for illegal drugs. No, the prohibition has nothing to do with it. The status on the ground in places like Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador has nothing to do with it. Damn it if we just built that wall!
I think, yes, we want to show compassion to the children who are here, but the most compassionate thing we can do is secure the borders.
I love hearing somebody like Robert Jeffress, who is constantly weeping and wailing and gnashing his teeth and sitting in sackcloth and ashes and wringing his hands over the unborned, talking about wanting to send children back into hell zones. Oops. Your hypocrisy is showing, Brother Pastor Minister Jeffress.
Sure. It is curious, Reverend, that you weren't invited, since you are, the leader of one of the largest congregations down in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And Dallas-Fort Worth, they're about to release 2,000 of these children into the general population.
Yep, just turn them loose into the general population. Apple and a roadmap and a Laurel and Hardy handshake, and there you go. Good luck, kid. The children who are released to homes where they already have relatives. Not that they're going to mention that on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
Well, and first of all, I doubt I would be on the president's invitation list or even his Christmas card list because of some of the things I've said on Fox.
You have been
about
critical about it, no doubt.
But look, this is not about partisan politics.
Having said that, of course, he will now prove himself a liar.
Frankly, I don't care whether the president goes to the border. I want him to secure the border, and he has the ability to do that right now. You know, he said just a few...
But, Pastor Brother, if you can get those children in and you get them into your church early enough, you can rot their tiny little minds and have them working to support your dead ass for the rest of your life. Don't you want that?
Weeks ago, he doesn't need Congress. He has a pen and a phone. Well, it's time to use that and issue one of those executive orders to protect our borders and protect children in the process.
Pastor Jeffries, we had Attorney General Greg Abbott on our program a couple of weeks ago saying he was considering suing the federal government for the expenses incurred for medical care, for crime, for...
Medical care, my left hind foot. Texas won't even provide medical care for its millions of poor working people. What medical care? Hey, kid, here's a Band-Aid. That'll be $1 million.
For education. You said you just spoke with him. What new are you hearing from him?
Well, it is truly, he says, a humanitarian crisis. And I want to remind you, both Greg Abbott and Rick Perry are compassionate people. I don't know President Obama, but I know Governor Perry. And you'll remember it was his compassion toward illegal immigrants that got him in trouble with his own party when he was running for president in 2011. So he has compassion, but he also recognizes that the most compassionate thing...
Yeah, compassion, smash, and faith without works is dead, Pastor Jeffress, but I'm guessing you don't read the book of James.
We can do is secure our borders. And, you know, if I could say this, because there are many Christians who watch...
Oh, here it comes. I think we're going to have an encyclical or a fatwa or something. Let's make sure we get it all.
Fox and Friends, and they're wondering what the right thing to do is. Yes, Jesus loved children, but he also respected law. He said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar. So we need to do both. Show compassion, but secure the borders.
That's right. All right.
Jesus wants a border fence. What does God need with a starship? You know, just wondering. What kind of New Testament word salad is that? Well, yeah, he said be nice to the kids, but he also said render under Caesar that which is Caesar's. Does anybody happen to remember how the render unto Caesar business goes down in that particular portion of the Gospels? Anybody? Bueller? A guy asks Yeshua, should we pay our taxes? And Yeshua says, give me a coin. And he says, whose face is on the coin? And the guy says, well, that's Caesar. And he says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. And and we could probably have about an hour-long discussion on exactly what that means. But that means pay your taxes. That means, that does not mean build a border fence. Maybe you could interpret it as meaning don't traffic in the money of Caesar. Because he also says things about consider the lilies, and you know, now he's having a go at the birds and all of that. But there's no connection in there between render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's and suffer the children, little children to come unto me, for that is the nature of the kingdom of heaven. How? It is. It's Bible word salad. Mercy sakes. So let's take a little break. It is 17 minutes past the hour. Hopefully some folks will jump in with Dwayne and with Asa on fundraising. We had contributions before, so it's actually probably not 120. It's probably closer to 105, I think. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. A bumper suggested by Ron via Tim. Tim inspired Ron, so here we go. This is The Horn, Head On Radio Network. We'll be back.
With a bad moon rising.
Look here, El Fago, watch my lips. Where were you born?
I was born in East L.A., man. I was born in East L.A.
Oh, yeah, you're born in East L.A. Well, let's see your green card, huh?
Green card? I'm from East L.A.
All right, well, then who's president of the United States?
Oh, that's easy, man. That guy that used to be on Death Valley days, John Wayne.
All right, let's go. Come on.
Morning.
genius that is Cheech and Chong. That was perfectly done. Perfect call, Ron, and thanks for thanks to Tim for providing the inspiration. Hey, and thanks very much to George. I recalculated. We are at $70 on the fundraising goal for this evening. I just wanted you to know. $70 on the fundraising goal. So seven folks at 10, and we're done. George with a note earlier today saying, so many more ends, so little time. Hope this helps a little in digging out of the hole. It helps a lot. It helps a lot indeed, George. Thank you very much. So Asa and George and Dwayne, thank you all for getting us to where we've gotten this evening. And anybody else wanting to jump in is more than welcome to. I guess we don't have a green news report this evening. Pity. I look forward to those. And this is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. It's 22 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And yes, indeed, the heat is back up. We haven't had rain in ages. And a lot of humidity, and I am, in fact, broadcasting live from the Horn Studio Sauna, or as Devin prefers to refer to it, the Horn Solar Furnace. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. Render unto Caesar? Actually, the subject line says render under Caesar. I'll explain that in a moment. Question mark, question mark, question mark. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. WTF. Many question marks. For once, a conservative finally acknowledges that Jesus said, pay your taxes, a quote I've heard liberals throw at them for years, but the conservative tries to twist it to mean Jesus was pro-border fences. Arrgh! And then I got the corrective email. Unto, not under, obviously, Bob. That clip made me so mad my autocorrect got the best of me. That's okay. What was it the other day? What was that? Oh, yeah, it was the double feature movie that we went to. I sent a, I forget if I was Facebooking or tweeting or texting or whatever, and I mentioned that the first feature of the film, talking about autocorrect, the first feature of the double feature was How to Train Your Dragon 2, which I repeat is a lovely little film with a nice message. And the second feature was X-Men Days of Future Past, which for some reason or another, autocorrect turned into X-Men Days of Furniture Polish. I let it stand. I thought it was precious. Thanks, Beth. Thanks very much. We are now down to only $50 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly, Beth. Our buddy Alan the Trucker with a note, subject line Honduras. From what I remember, when W. Bush was president, his administration supported the coup of the elected president of Honduras. The overthrown president was doing things radical, like raising the minimum wage. I wonder if our government is picking the pace of supporting right-wingers in Central America again. That has been an ongoing American failing. We got a taste for supporting right-wing autocrats in our global South, you know, because Monroe Doctrine, right? Let's go to the phones. A reminder of the phone number, of course. Hey, there's the Green News Report right after we're done with the break. Dadgummit, Brad. We'll go to the phones, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, if you want to jump in to the conversation. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, the radio said they were just deportees, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing
not, mind you, human beings. They're not human beings. If they were human beings, they'd be nice and white.
Yep. Well, you know, you're familiar with who wrote the song.
Yes,
Woody, of course.
Yep.
And that's what I hope about. I don't know with some of the younger Horn folks, whether they get the same opportunities that were handed to me of people were like Woody Guthrie and many more like him who were Phil Oakes. These are people I heard every day. In fact, I used to go see Buffy St. Marie when she'd come to Cleveland. not only was she a great singer, but she was really nice to look at while she was performing. Fine young lady. And, I don't know, it was just a time and a place. Like you mentioned, the situation, you're familiar with, you didn't read all of Anna's short stuff, did you? Not all
no,
of this time in a
while. No, I haven't read the short stories, no.
If you can find $106,000 board money, which is the title of one of them, one of the actually it's in one volume now, it's called The Big Knockover. It's a story of a bunch of...
is that a collection of his... is that a collection of his short work?
Yeah.
I will go
great
looking
stuff
for it.
It reads quickly, and because you get a... Remember, a lot of that stuff was published by Black Mask Magazine that was published in the early 1920s, you know, 1918, or teens, actually. And these things were going big time then. One story, Corkscrew, the Continental Opera, sent down to the border of an area that wasn't a state yet, which could have been, what, Arizona?
Yeah, what, Arizona becomes a
Arizona
state in 1912?
Was it New Mexico was before them or after them?
Before, I think. I could be wrong.
Okay, but he went on there to investigate it. The town didn't have any kind of law, so he was hired to go down and police the area. And one of the backstories there was the amount of border crossing that was going on. So is there something new here? No. And, of course, the other one was set in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it was an influx of Asian immigrants, Asian, whatever, I don't know what to call it.
Well, you know, for the most part, let's be clear about something. All these right-wingers, Bill, talking about how we support legal immigration. Immigration to this country has always been a brutal thing.
Yeah.
Consider, because we both have a historical bent, Bill, consider the depiction of Irish people in, say, 1850s cartooning. They were portrayed, the Irish were portrayed as apes.
Yep.
You've seen them, I'm sure.
They were living very, very, in New York City, Bob, I can't describe. People were basically almost living in holes in the ground. And my folks, you know, the fat, jolly beer drinkers?
Yeah.
They didn't like us much either.
Nobody was liked. You know, that the history of Appalachia is a history of abused people because we started out as abused people. Abused people came across the Allegheny front and started abusing the native people. That old joke about how, how's it go? The English came and built a house, the Germans came and built a barn, the Scots-Irish came and built a still.
Yeah, well, there's a certain amount of humor in the booze business, you know? The home brewers and the, it was a social thing, yeah. I tell you, when Germany took over that island out to that territory off the coast of China and started it, after they built everything that they needed for their navy, they had to build a brewery. See, those social things like that are is there something even about Scotch whiskey?
There are some who would say.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are some folks who shouldn't touch alcohol because there's something in their system that nobody's been able to put a finger on why I drank plenty, you know, but I don't drink anymore. I never had a problem with it. I mean, I did have a problem with it. I drank enough that I didn't get hangovers anymore. But I never had to go to a meeting. I held the meetings three times a week myself, you know. Master of ceremonies for the meeting. And really, I had a hard time with people when they couldn't hold their liquor. I mean, I just felt, you know, if you're getting to a point where you're acting like a complete fool, you got a problem. You better start looking into what the problem is. Because I don't care what the situation. I have my, unfortunately, the sexual revolution, that merry-go-round was in full swing in my youth, Bob. God, you know, it was insane. But it didn't help me any either. But everything you're exposed to, and but you hit it on the nose of the, but yet some of the hardest fighting people in the Civil War armies were Irishmen. No doubt about it. Most patriotic. Well, being, you know, from the northern end of the spectrum, I've read more of that stuff than I have anything else. And the Irish Brigade at places like Antietam, God, Bob, did they lay it out, you know?
Oh, yeah. I got an observation in via email here, Bill, from our buddy Irish Dave. And he says, the eternal North American question, are wasps an invasive system or an invasive species?
Yeah.
You know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. He continues, you know, of course, that we Irish would rule the world were it not for whiskey. And I love that old saying, what is it? A Scotsman is never drunk so long as he can hang on to one blade of grass and not fall off the earth.
Because every group has had its exposure to what was it, Slivovitz? Isn't that
Hungarian?
Balkan?
Well, I thought it was Hungarian.
Hungarian, yeah, you're right, Hungarian.
And that stuff will nail you to the ground. 100-proof plum brandy.
Well, I worked music for a Lebanese family. And by the way, these were Christian Lebanese. They'd come here in the 1880s to Cleveland. You know, they were Middle Easterners. And what did he turn me on to? The stuff that looks like milk on them. I mean, it's white. Ouzo.
Oh, yeah. If you drop an ice cube in it, it turns white. Yeah, ouzo.
Yeah, the guy brought me a cup of homemade Turkish coffee, which I still use a little can for and make some once in a great while. When you have to get a really fine ground coffee to start with, you know, and you kind of boil it. We called it, we had another name for it in the 60s, it was hipster's drink, man. You know, you drank that around when you were listening to poetry readings, that coffee.
Were there bongos involved?
Pardon?
Were there bongos involved?
Yeah.
Turtleneck sweaters, little goatees?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Anisettes are an entire subspecies, and they all behave the same way with the ice cube, whether it's Zambuca or Ouzo. And then there's the wonderful world of Mediterranean moonshine, referred to variously as Rocky or Grappa. Holy hell.
We had a neighborhood here which was Greek in nature, and they played a card game down there that was slipping my old mind now. It was just, you want to lose money? Go down and play that game. Oof. That was the thing. I'm still trying to find a book that was one of the ones that got tossed on me, which I, you know, much as I'm so thankful for the help those guys gave me, throwing away books is a, well, that's a sin to me. You know, it's a sin and a crime, you know. It was a card game, a Greek card game. Damn. Somebody out there, come on, somebody in the family's got to know what that's called.
We will probably have an answer in fairly short order.
Well, all I ever knew about that game was if you wanted to watch your money go out of your wallet in a hurry, play that game. That's why I say this book of showbiz from VOD to video is just a wonderful piece of background to America, because there was so many ethnic groups around it, and every one of them had something positive to offer. But part of me wonders, you know, the so-called Republicans are screaming about people coming into the country. That used to be a favorite of theirs because you could hire cheap labor. Those guys always liked cheap labor, didn't they?
I've never known them not to.
Yep. Lauren Esselman, the detective writer, he did some series of different books on Detroit over the years. And man, oh man, Bob, the labor movement and the beatings of the labor organizers by Harry Bennett and those people that worked for the companies, and they beat the hell out of these guys if they had to. Well, I can remember playing a job. I probably told you the story too many times. I'm playing a job in Lake County on a Saturday night. It was either the beginning of May or the end of May, and the guys came in and they told me, "Hey, we burned the ROTC building in Kent tonight." And my first reaction was, "Uh-oh." And what happened the following Tuesday, Bob?
Yeah. Slaughter.
And wasn't there some shooting at Jackson State at the black school? Basically a land-grant school, as they called them. Yeah, you know, the thing was getting out of hand. I mean, people were actually standing up for what they believed in, and the Vietnam era things really started to break down when the folks who were over there doing the fighting and dying came home and were not really pleased with what the hell we were doing over there to begin with. I mean, let's face it, nobody wants to go out and put on a uniform. The guys in World War II didn't, but I hate to say this, but maybe there was something they had to fight and die for because of the Nazis and the Imperial Japanese, all-powerful military. And what bothers me is, are we going in that direction ourselves, huh?
Oh,
when did that start?
See, that goes back to something that I heard said many years ago. One of the Iraqi weapons inspectors, the one that the Bush administration tried to slime for saying, you know, there are no weapons of mass destruction over here. There just aren't. Spoke at a Seneca II meeting, a wonderful little group down in the Kanawha Valley, and he said, "I used to get people used to ask me, are we headed for fascism?" And because of my upbringing and because of my education, I would say, "Oh no, not us." And he said, "I have updated my thoughts on it." And he says, "We're not heading for fascism; we are in it. We are in it."
Yeah, we could say that. One of those stories I learned reading about the French sent a battalion to as part of the Korean UN forces. And after that mess ended, they were shipped back to Vietnam and they became Group Mobile 100. And the Viet Minh caught them and wrecked them. So later on, the U.S. men were over there fighting and they came upon a monument to this French Group Mobile 100 near a place called Pleiku. Guess who the Americans, what they were doing over there? There wasn't a Boy Scout jamboree, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
They were fighting on the same damn ground, Bob, or close to it. And there's a pretty good book called We Were Soldiers Once and Young.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was made into a terrible movie featuring the terrible Mel Gibson.
Yeah. To me, I'm a book man first and a movie man second. Because you and I have talked about Baum, L. Frank Baum, and where he stood politically. If you see the movie The Wizard of Oz, would you get any of that out of it?
No.
But there's that one scene where they're crawling through that poppy field, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that say something? That, you know?
Yeah.
Poppy?
Drug trade?
And I'm going to... Pardon me?
Yeah, the drug trade.
Yep. I'm going to make the observation that... I mean, I saw it in the 60s. 67, I was offered heroin. I said, no, I don't think so. Because I don't have that much confidence in myself that I could beat that stuff. Come on. A cup of coffee and a cigarette in the morning, and I can't beat that. So what the hell am I going to do with heroin, you know?
Yeah, no chance.
And when they were calling, that thing was, that poppy trade really started to kick ass again once we got into Afghanistan, did it?
Well, the poppy trade was huge. when we were at play in Vietnam, and it's calmed down a little bit, and then you know for years you didn't hear so much about heroin in the news, and then we went and you know we got to remember the Taliban, shit weasels that they are, maybe. Well, yeah. I mean, if you're using the soccer stadium to cut off people's heads for being religiously unorthodox or not properly,
yeah,
you're an asshole. But what they had done is they had suppressed the poppy production. In fact, the United States government, we the people, gave them a bunch of money precisely for doing that. You know, we were paying the Taliban. And Afghan heroin production went through the floor. And as soon as we started our war against Afghanistan, for not much in the way of a particularly good reason, the warlords came back into power. And guess what warlords do? They make heroin.
Yep,
the heroin trade goes right back up through the roof.
And to sound like an evil person, I hate to say this because it makes me maybe in some people's mind, a non-leftist, is that Ho Chi Minh was selling heroin, for God's sake.
Well, you go to war with the economy you have, not the economy you want, as Rumsfeld might say.
Yeah. You had to get weaponry, and they say there's some dark secrets in that Operation Vulture where the Dulles brothers were pushing Ike to start bombing around D&D and Foo. In fact, they were talking nuclear bombs at one point. People don't teach that in school. You have to go pick it up out of a book written by an independent writer, a military writer.
Yeah.
A good military writer covers every angle of the thing. And it isn't a matter of good and evil, this is what happened. This is the way certain segments of the power structure were leaning in this direction and that direction. And they're still leaning in those directions, but. Like this stuff with these kids, the question I have is where are they coming from in large groups? How are they arriving here in large groups?
They're being transported. You see,
yeah.
A lot of these children have family in the United States. So mama, and you and I, Bill, from the relatively cosseted comfort of our privileged lives in the United States, cannot begin to conceive of a situation in which life would be so intolerable that a mother and a father would look at their precious 8-year-old child and say, we're going to take every bit of money that we have for feeding ourselves, and we're going to pay a trafficker to transport you out of here all the way through Mexico to the American border because you've got family on the other side and you might survive. Because when parents do that, and that's the thing that these merciless, soulless, heartless, right-wing, teabagging, Gadsden flag-toting, info-war freaks, they have no human compassion. They have no quality of mercy. Remember, the quality of mercy is not strained. It falleth like the gentle rain from heaven upon the just and the unjust. They have no conception of what it must be like, because if I sit here and doing what I'm doing, I'm falling apart inside thinking what it must be as a parent to say, listen, child, we love you. We love you more than we love our own lives. Therefore, we are going to put ourselves at hazard. We may starve to death, but what money we have, we're going to pay to someone to get you to America so that maybe you can live. I mean, if you just ponder that, if you just meditate upon that for only a few minutes, you'll begin to weep, and your very being will ache with the agony of it.
Yep, absolutely.
Imagine watching your 8-year-old walk away and knowing that you will never see him again or her. And that your only hope is to get them out of the hell that has been created around you by a variety of different American foreign policy bumblings, missteps, misdeeds, mistakes, and overt, egregious screw-ups.
Oh, Bob, you remember what a wonderful person Chiquita Banana was.
Oh, another one? Yeah, those corporate people.
Just a little bullet right behind the ear, and you don't have a Chiquita Banana, the labor organizing agitation problem anymore. And your board of directors is represented by this really good, friendly lawyer by the name of Eric Holder. And he talks to the Bush administration Justice Department and says, hey, yeah, these guys knew they were involved in murder for hire, but look at them. They're decent people. Let's cut them a break. Let's make sure none of them ever see the inside of a prison cell. And the Bush administration is more than Justice Department is more than happy to say, absolutely. Oh, and by the way, I don't know that this is entirely tangential, but the Obama administration, Eric Holder-led Justice Department, has officially declined to investigate the CIA spying on the Congress, in particular the Senate. No thanks.
Yeah, well,
no thanks.
They always refuse to admit to those people have anything to do. And of course, on paper, the CIA was set up as an agency to do no business in this country, Bob. When you go back to the beginnings of it, it was to do with...
Oh, it came out of the OSS, and what was his name?
Yep.
Wild Bill... can't remember his last name. But by 1963, shortly after the assassination of John Kennedy, Harry Truman, then out of office for...
Years he'd been out, yeah.
Yeah, well, 11 years. Writes an op-ed in the New York Times in which he says that the CIA should be entirely scrapped.
Yep. Because people didn't realize that we actually, the United States had broken the Japanese diplomatic code before World War II. And people think I'm siding with the Japanese, no, I can't. The Japanese military had a shitload of... anthrax that they wanted to drop on Saipan when my ex-father-in-law was, risking his life with the rest of the Marines over there on Saipan. So it doesn't have anything to do with race or nationality. It has to do with the mentality and the feelings of the power structures, wherever you want to go. The folks who have the real power. And the last I looked, I wasn't wielding much power. I'm wielding a little bit too much weight, and that's about the extent of that. You know, it's I'm not even where I was. I'm supposed to do a radio show next week, and I'm scared to death. You mean I go out and play again? It's been 6 years, Bob.
Well,
the harmonica.
Did you get over the rehearsal hump?
Yeah, well, I'm not going, yeah. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. Lyrics are blowing out of my mind, and somebody got in here a couple of years ago and got a lot of CDs from me, so it's hard to sit down and work with. I have my own stuff on record, and I said, well, if you want to talk to me about the rise of blues in the city of Cleveland, we can do that. You can play some of the... I've got 3 CDs worth of material. You want to play something? Here it is. And you got a live group? Let this guy sing the words, and I'll sit here quietly and do what I really love to do, which is play background. See, my love of clarinet playing comes out when I'm playing in an ensemble. I try to weave around me. Become a second line, second lead, just like a clarinet player would, you know? Or somebody sings a line, I've got a basket full of fills that I love to play and to compliment what this guy's doing. You know, because that's the whole deal. Well, I don't care if you're playing ball. You support the rest of the performers on that stage. That's the idea with me. It's not about how... Yeah, I know how good I used to be. But... you know, there's a lot of things. Bob, I could catch a baseball game. I was like you. I enjoyed catching. But I don't think I'd do it today.
I don't have the knees for it anymore.
Well, I was about 35, and they had a picnic. They had a game going. Some guy hits a fly ball, and I make a running catch. And these musicians are practically rolling around on the ground saying, you see what he just did? Well, Bob, I was... a young kid in the 50s, man, he played baseball. That was it, man. You played ball. You know. Now, one game I could never play, and I got a buddy who still plays quite a bit, and he plays with young American kids, and he's in the 70s, and he still, they call him Set Shot because of his style. But he still gets out there and plays.
Good for him. You talk about that era, Bill. I remember a classic Foghorn Leghorn Warner Brothers cartoon in which he is trying to teach the little boy rooster who's a science nerd to get out in sun and play and stuff. And he hands the little boy a baseball, and the little rooster is absolutely perplexed and. Foghorn Leghorn deadpans the camera in the fourth wall and says, "There's something kind of ooh about a boy ain't never played baseball."
Yeah. Well, when they stuck me in that Catholic children's home, which was in those days was actually a comparatively just a normal place, a normal boarding school type environment. And so we did all summer long was play baseball, for God's sake. What else was there to do? If I picked up a book, the nuns would yell at me. "What are you doing? What are you doing that for?" "Well, I might learn something." I basically taught myself more stuff out of books than I ever learned from teachers, that's for sure. I had a teacher call me an occupational hazard. I don't know what that was about to this day.
Hey, have you been checking
anyhow,
out? Have
I'll
been,
let you
I was
know.
Ask you, have you been checking out Dr. Bill this week?
I've been trying to, yes.
Yeah, his podcasts are all up, and wow. Like Dr. John said, he has been on fire. So if you haven't, the last couple of weeks, the month has been
well. He lays out an area. Well, I know a little bit about the Revolutionary War. If I say Saratoga to most people, they think of horse racing.
Yeah.
Or but wasn't that a musical? It featured something about that. But anyway, that was one of the places the British had a three-pronged plan to defeat the revolutionaries, and one of the beatings they took was at Saratoga in New York, and Washington had nothing to do with it, by the way. He wasn't around. I forget who it was.
No, most of the great victories of the American Revolution, the real key to victory was not having George Washington anywhere near it.
Well, his track record as a commanding general. Of course, as you know, being a Civil War type guy, Yorktown had a second roughhouse in the 60s, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The Peninsula Campaign, McClellan, and I mean, you read books on that stuff, you begin to wonder, how in the hell did the North ever win, except when you go west of the Appalachians, you know, and start looking at names like Perryville and Murfreesboro and
Shiloh.
And Shiloh and Island Number 10 and on and on, and of course Chattanooga was the one. That's where you mentioned MacArthur's father. That's where he was awarded the congressional, although he didn't get it for many, many years. But he had a lot of ego problems too, which maybe can actually, I didn't realize that ego problems could be handed down from father to son, you know?
Yeah, but, who knew it was genetic? Hey, Bill, have yourself a good evening.
Take care of yourself.
All
good
right.
Night now.
Bye now. That's our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Lines open, 304-574-8178. A lot of stuff to go into in the remaining hour of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. We'll take a little break because the Green News Report is out, and I love the Green News Report, doggone it. We'll take a little break and come back. Since we've been talking about children this evening, maybe in the next hour, I got a link via our buddy the Angry Indian. Maybe in this hour, the coming up hour, maybe we'll check out and find out how Palestinian children are doing these days. Hint, get the Kleenex. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
25 Mexicans live in the house where I was born. That's fine. Don't worry me none. I got nothing against the Mexicans. I watch them work like the worker bees, keep building them roads, chopping down trees, doing a job my kind won't. Sometimes they smile, most times they don't. Across the border line, man's dream. Do a better life, we would seem. Far from home, they have to come, make some money, and send it home. In the trailer trucks, in the minivans, pack it like a sardine, in a sardine can. Oh, now mama, mama, let the candles burn. In the boiling heat of a Texas sun, left to die and her down go about a half of a mile from Mexico. You drive the truck, boy, that's the deal. You just a guy behind a wheel. Get the money, all you can. Don't worry about them Mexicans. Oh, now mama, mama, let the candles burn for one day.
It's Thursday, July 10, 2014.
The temperature on Mars is exactly as it is here. Nobody will dispute that, yet there are no coal mines on Mars.
Anti-science nuttery alive and well in the coal state of Kentucky. BP's oil still contaminating fish in the Gulf. Canada's tar sands linked to cancer among First Nations tribes. Plus,
we were able to discover ecological effects that would otherwise have been overlooked.
Popular pesticide killing off the birds and the bees.
All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It was 30, 40 years ago when I would see Time magazine covers on the global cooling to come. It scared the you-know-what out of me when they said, well, if you like lizards, get used to them. I mean, come on. I mean, that was then. What's different now?
Well, thanks for asking, Neil Cavuto of Fox News. What's different now is that back in the 70s, when you pretend to remember Time magazine covers warning about cooling, it was a tiny minority of scientists who were concerned about that global cooling, while the majority of scientists then, as now, were worried about anthropogenic global warming. In fact, there were six times as many peer-reviewed scientists predicting warming rather than cooling back in the 70s. But back then, protecting the fossil fuel industry wasn't a bought and paid for interest of pretend news outlets like Fox News. Oh, and that cooling they warned about, it was based in part on smog caused by aerosols, which we largely did away with because we didn't have pretend news outlets like Fox News to lie to us at the time about a wholly pretend cataclysmic economic effect of trying to actually take care of our planet and human civilization. So that's what's different now. But thanks again for asking, Neil Cavuto of Fox News. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, since I'm so mad at Neil Cavuto, I'll let you get started, and then we'll get back to Kentucky coal country by the end.
Oh, you and your science. Well, here's a little more science. The BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico is still contaminating fish today. According to a team of researchers led by the University of South Florida, they say oil found in lesions on sick fish matches the distinct chemical composition of the 2010 Deepwater Horizon spill. In a statement, BP rejected the linkage, claiming it's not possible to identify a source of oil after more than a few days, but the researchers say this contamination was recent and that BP's oil was by far the closest match. In Canada, new research links tar sands pollution to cancer clusters. Scientists at the University of Manitoba say they have found unusual contamination levels in fish and animals near the massive tar sands development of Alberta, which they say may be the cause behind unusually high rates of rare cancers in First Nations tribal members. The study finds high concentrations of carcinogenic pollutants in fish and animals consumed as part of traditional diets. The same class of pesticides implicated in the decline of bees around the world is now implicated in the decline of birds, too.
Neonicotinoids were always regarded as selective toxins, but our results suggest that they may influence the entire ecosystem.
That was Professor Hans de Kroon of the University of Radboud in the Netherlands.
The University of what?
I think it's Radboud.
Okay.
His researchers say high concentrations of a popular class of pesticides called neonicotinoids that run off into water appear to be killing more than just the targeted pests and may be contaminating and killing off the food supply for birds in farming areas as well. Here in the U.S., a new study finds rich Republicans are far more likely to be climate change deniers. Researchers found self-identified Democrats and independents at all income levels apparently have no problem accepting the science of climate change, but the highest numbers of science deniers were among rich Republicans. Apparently, the researchers say, if your wealth comes from polluting industries, you may be less likely to acknowledge the climate impacts caused by those industries.
That's a total coincidence.
And that may explain the anti-science nuttery in Kentucky's State House. During a hearing on new EPA emission standards for coal-fired power plants, Kentucky State Senator Brandon Smith, a Republican, argued this.
I don't want to get into debate about the climate change, but I will just simply point out that I think in academia we all agree that the temperature on Mars is exactly as it is here. Nobody will dispute that, yet there are no coal mines on Mars. There's no factories on Mars that I'm aware of.
There are so many things wrong with that, I don't even know where to start. The average temperature on Earth is actually 57 degrees Fahrenheit, while it's negative 81 degrees Fahrenheit on Mars.
He was only 138 degrees off. Come on.
And the point that he was trying to make is that global warming is happening on Mars, much as it is here, except there's really no evidence that it's happening on Mars at all, other than two separate photographs taken 30 years apart, which have been misinterpreted for years by the climate denier industry. That said, while Kentucky State Republican Senator Brandon Smith is a denier and, incidentally, a coal mine owner, the Democrats in Kentucky in the legislature are also climate change deniers. One of them, State Rep Kevin Sinnett, said during that same hearing that, quote, the dinosaurs died and we don't know why, but the world adjusted. And he's just one. The head of the committee, Jim Gooch Jr., had talked about seceding from the union back in 2011 to avoid EPA regulations on mining. So in that state, at least, it's not just Republicans. It's the whole bunch of Mad Hatters. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Yes,
like I said, I always enjoy the heck out of out of the Green News Report, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. This is the Horn, 10th day of July, 2014, 6 minutes past 8 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. If you're listening live, God only knows what time it is if you're listening on a podcast, and that's just fine. Remember, you can always get the podcast feed address over at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. Let's see. Lines are open. This is, after all, conversation radio. Lines are open, and the number is 304-574-8178. Or, if you prefer to simply connect Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you want to jump in that way, that's fine and dandy, too. We are trying to reach our evening's fundraising goal. The amount now stands at $50. $50 to go for the evening. And thank you to Beth, and thank you to George, and thank you to Asa, and thank you to gotta try to keep the list current. Dwayne, thank you, Dwayne. Dwayne and Asa and George and Beth have gotten us down to $50 to go for fundraising this evening. All help is deeply appreciated because that's how we pay bills. I had a bill-paying frenzy last night, and it's kind of nice to get those monkeys off one's back, or off the horn's back, off of our back. So $50, 5 at 10, 2 at 25, 1 at 50, 10 at 5, however you care to break it up is just fine as long as we can stay out of the hole. So let's go to the phones. Hey, what's happening? Welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
We know, Jim.
Oh. It was pretty interesting. I just got home and I just heard the last part of what Bill was talking about. And that kind of perked in my ears about Truman, what Truman said, you know, regarding the CIA. And basically,
yeah.
Kennedy said the same thing, and look what happened to Kennedy, mysteriously enough. But this also goes back, I think it was Malloy mentioned the other night, something about Operation Paperclip. Is that what you were referring to, another operation?
I'm not sure.
Because he said, I'm going to Google it, check it out.
I remember mentioning Operation Northwoods the other night.
Yeah. Yeah, I also remember Operation Paperclip because I wasn't sure, and that happened in the late 40s, early 50s. You know, and in the late 40s, the CIA was the OSS, and they've been busy ever since they came into being, huh?
They had to justify their existence.
Yeah, well, they sure have. It's just, and then, yeah, that famous line from JFK about threatening to tear him up and the CIA up into 1,000 pieces. And I guess that, in some ways, that ended up happening to his brain in Dallas and Dealey Plaza.
But, and that's entirely a coincidence, Jim.
Yeah.
Hell of a coincidence.
A whole bunch of coincidences when you get into that.
And, you know, we have this, some of this stuff reverberates down through the ages to this very day. You know, a lot of people, I saw, for instance, my favorite blogger, Charlie Pierce, opining today that President Obama really does need to go down to the border and, you know, do a first hand, because it draws attention to the crisis and to the, and to hopefully the way that humane, decent people want to solve it, as opposed to the way that the morons like these people in Michigan want to address it. You know, the one woman said she wanted landmines. Yeah. So, I tend to agree. But by the same token, like I said, these things reverberate through the ages. If I was Barack Obama, I would, and because, you know, he had that little meeting in Dallas and everything, where Rick Perry was coy and said he didn't know, he thought he might have been having his hair done that day and all kinds of stuff. But
if I were Barack Obama, I'd be nervous about going to Texas too, because that place is in a frenzy, a right wing frenzy that probably the likes of which have not been seen since JFK.
Right. Well, I remember they had handbill, it was a handbill, I guess, that they were passing out, you know, with JFK's picture on it and wanted for treason. And that all goes back to the white Russians of Dallas, who happened to be friends with, I think, Lee Harvey Oswald, who I think was kind of being set up. But
yeah, what did Oswald say? I'm a patsy.
Probably truer words have never been spoken, but I guess we'll turn it over to Fox. I'm sure Fox can get down to the bottom of that.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, the other thing is, it's just they keep on doing the same thing and getting away with it, and it doesn't seem like any substantial percentage. I guess it's 30-40% that kind of catch a clue, but there's a good solid 50-60% that just can't wrap their mind around it.
Right, and if you know American history, you will recall, Jim, that big movements and big stupids do not require a majority of the country. They require a bare plurality. The majority of the colonies did not want to break away from Great Britain. I remember learning about this in the Ken Burns documentary about Prohibition. The majority of the country did not want to outlaw alcohol, but a noisy plurality was able to accomplish it. And you know what? When I, in my little corner of Appalachia, when I can't stop at a stop sign without seeing a bumper sticker with InfoWars on it and fluoride, there's poison in the water, it's a movement. And that plurality is building.
Yeah.
Do you remember the story of the night of the Kennedy assassination, Jim?
Which one is that?
Well, the night of the Kennedy assassination, Mr. and Mrs. Reagan, who were still, and Ronald Reagan was still just a B-movie actor, had scheduled a dinner party at their home. The night that Kennedy was killed, they did not cancel it. And, in fact, they celebrated his assassination.
Yeah, I think I heard you mention that once before. That sounds about par for the course for these types of, I'm not going to call them human beings, individuals, psychopaths. That's just a little, that's SOP, you know, I guess for that, those kind of, and, you know, and it's weird, you, when I was growing up, you know, when I was like 17, 18, you know, Carter was elected, you know, I said, well, okay, we got a Democrat in, maybe he can do something. He did, you know, had to.
He's the only president in recent history not to have himself a war. To bomb anybody.
And they went after him. Well, I mean, that Iran-Contra thing, I mean, that's, to me, pretty obvious that the Republicans worked out a deal. That kind of sounds like treason to me, major treason.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't, most people aren't aware of it or just dismiss it or, I guess they also just don't want to believe it. I mean, even though since Reagan got in, as far as the working class has gone, you know, when things have gotten a lot worse for the majority of the working class, and yet they still have these people swearing by the Republican Party, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it shouldn't even be, I mean, a Democrat should win by, you know, 60 to 40, not 53 to 46. It shouldn't even be close. I mean, I know you get this hardcore patches, but, you know, that's why in 2000 I voted for Nader, because I just figured no way they would elect Bush. too. I mean, I thought, you know, a substantial percentage of the population would say, wait a minute, Bob was just president 2 terms ago. Why are we starting this monarchy thing? And you and I talked about that. We're getting into the realm thing. Well, there's a good chance that we'll get a Bush 3. And then maybe, you know, or we'll get a Hillary, you know, Clinton 2. And then it's going to be like Clinton, Bush, Clinton, Bush. it doesn't look good. I mean, Clinton did a couple of good things, but, you know, there's a lot of negative things. One of the things I think is screwing up the economy a great deal, and I'm no economist, but the Glass-Steagall, getting rid of that. I mean, when they got rid of that, like, what are you thinking? That's basically what got us out of helped get us out of the Depression and helped us from having another major Depression. And what I understand, that's basically what capitalism is like. It's a roller coaster. Pretty much. In fact, if you look at U.S. history, what I know of it, you got all these booms and busts. When there was a big crash in 1848?
Up until the first third of the 20th century, it was nothing. It was just a cycle of boom and bust and crash and and panics.
I remember that.
You know, they were referred to as panics.
Right, I remember that because it was like remember in a world history class I took. It was like in 1848, but that's also when Karl Marx came out with his book, and I think Darwin came out with his book. I think in 1848. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you know, I think that's around the time.
Oh, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in 1848, all over Europe too.
Yeah,
I mean there was a transnational revolution going on.
Yeah, and I'm really impressed with I can't think of his name. I'm trying to catch up on his shows. I only caught one.
Oh, Dr. Bill?
Yeah, Dr. Bill. You know, he was taught, I think he mentioned something about, you know, right after the American Revolution, shortly thereafter, then all of a sudden you had the American Transcendental Movement, you know, which kind of everything got away from politics. You know, and everything kind of got off on this super spiritual level. If I'm maybe I'm mixing it up with something else, but I know I heard somebody mention that, and that does seem to have happened, and that spirituality thing creeped in, and yeah, and then everybody starts, don't worry about this life, it's the next one that really counts, when you know.
Yeah, pray and pray, live on hay, day by day, there'll be pie in the sky when you die. I was kind of hoping for banana pudding in the sky, but it doesn't scan. I like banana pudding. Other Jim, you know, we have a confraternity of Jims here now. Other Jim.
It's a great name.
Yeah, Jim just wrote in and noted, yes, that that party at the Reagan house, home of 22 November 63, was attended by the actors Robert Taylor and John Wayne as well. Kitty Kelly documented it. Nancy greeted guests at the home by saying, "No talk about you know what." All the other parties that evening were canceled.
Yeah, I remember John Wayne's great movie back in '68, The Green Berets, which was just, you know, pure propaganda.
Oh, yeah,
it's
just delightfully dumb.
You know, and at the end of the movie, I remember he was telling the little Vietnamese boy, "Oh, don't worry, son, I'm paraphrasing, American capitalism will solve everything, and you know, you'll be living in a free country." And
well, don't worry, you know, little pilgrim, the free market's gonna bomb you with some free market. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's napalm. It's really it's not only this napalm and this or Agent Orange. It's not only a defoliant. it's a breath mint, too. You know?
Yeah, and a dessert topping.
Yeah, dessert topping. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. So I guess it's weird. It's more, you know, and then like the other night you were talking, I forget the guy's name, gentleman's name, and he was very optimistic about things. And
oh, Brother Albert. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I like to hear that, but it's just hard to.
It's hard to plow through stuff. The question is, I know it sounds like a halftime locker room speech, Jim, but who wants it more? Who wants it more? The people who want to go to a Star Trek future, or the people who want to go to a Mad Max future? Who wants it more?
Yeah.
And when I know I'm making a big deal out of a little thing, but when there's InfoWars stickers and fluoride, you know, that was a joke in Dr. Strangelove. On a stop sign in a little tiny community in Fayette County, West Virginia, I think they want it more. And remember, they're willing to, and see, this is one of the other fundamental differences, they're willing to kill to get their way.
Oh, yeah. Then if they get their way, they'll be sorry, but they won't know it. I mean, it's just like the people, all the quote-unquote Democrats who voted for Reagan, within 10, 15 years, I mean, they started, they started feeling it. And then now look what the Republicans are trying to do with Social Security, and they're trying to cut it back. And those people, or some of those people, are depending on Social Security, you know.
And the Republican Party has trotted out that tired old trope that they love they've begun whomping that dead horse again about how people on disability ain't really disabled, and they're just a mooching off the system.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that reminds me of your pal in Texas about people buying steak with food stamps.
No. Crab legs, Jim. Crab legs. Alaska King crab legs. Whole grocery carts full of them. While the humble yeoman worker stands behind them in line with a basket full of ramen noodles.
Yeah. I'd like to eat king crab too, but I gotta buy hamburger and ramen noodles. All right, well, I'm going to let you go. Let somebody else get through. I think I did my little rant for today.
All right, Jim. You have yourself a good evening down there in Louisiana, Stan.
All right.
Take care.
You too.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim, Louisiana Stan. Line's open, of course, 304-574-8178. I guess we could call this 10th day of July 2014 edition of The Horn the Children's Hour Thorn in the Side Thursday. Damn. Reuters reporting yesterday, actually. An Israeli airstrike killed 7 Palestinian civilians on Thursday, including 5 children, in the largest death toll from a single attack since the start of a 3-day offensive against Hamas militants in Gaza. Residents and medical officials said an Israeli airstrike bombed at least 2 houses in a densely populated area near Khan Yunis while residents were asleep. Yeah. Bodies were pulled out of the rubble from 3 or 4 homes. Of the 7 killed, 5 were children. The Gaza Health Ministry has updated its numbers. As of today at 4:18 p.m., the Gaza Health Ministry has confirmed the deaths of 82 Palestinians since the Israeli slaughter began. 21 are of age 16 or younger. The youngest victim of the Israeli onslaught is 18-month-old Mohammed Malakia. He and his 27-year-old mother were butchered together. Nafia Farjallah
is the oldest of the victims. She was 80. Yeah. And it turns out, and I was surprised of this article by Texas Betsy, and it's published in the Jewish Daily Forward. This is worth reading. It's out there on my Facebook page somewhere. How politics and lies triggered an unintended war in Gaza. Kidnap, crackdown, mutual missteps, and a hail of rockets. J.J. Goldberg, reporting, writes, in the flood of angry words that poured out of Israel and Gaza during a week of spiraling violence, few statements were more blunt or more telling than this throwaway line by the chief spokesman of the Israeli military, Brigadier General Moti Almoz, speaking July 8th on Army Radio's morning show. We have been instructed by the political echelon to hit Hamas hard. J.J. Goldberg points out that's unusual language for a military mouthpiece. Typically, they spout lines like, we will take all necessary actions, or the state of Israel will defend its citizens. You don't expect to hear, this is the politician's idea, they're making us do it. Spokesmen don't speak for themselves. Almoz was expressing a frustration that was building in the army command for nearly a month since the June 12th kidnapping of three Israeli yeshiva boys. The crime set off a chain of events in which Israel gradually lost control of the situation, finally ending up on the brink of a war that nobody wanted, not the army, not the government, not even the enemy, Hamas. Yeah. Once and of course not mentioned in this is the lynching of a Palestinian teenager by a gang of armed Israeli settler thugs. The frustration had numerous causes. Once the boy's disappearance was known, troops began a massive 18-day search and rescue operation, entering thousands of homes, arresting and interrogating hundreds of individuals, racing against the clock. Only on July 1st, after the boy's bodies were found, did the truth come out. Yeah, this is way down several paragraphs into the story, but pay attention. The Israeli government had known almost from the beginning that the boys were dead. It maintained the fiction that it hoped to find them alive as a pretext to dismantle Hamas's West Bank operations. The initial evidence was the recording of victim Gilad Shair's desperate cell phone call to Moked 100, Israel's 911. When the tape reached the security services the next morning, neglected for hours by Moked 100 staff, the teen was heard whispering, "They've kidnapped me," in Hebrew. Followed by shouts of heads down, and then gunfire, two groans, more shots, and then singing in Arabic. Yeah. Read the article. The slaughter is unbearable. Well, no, it's not unbearable. It wasn't unbearable to 18-month-old Mohammed Malakia. 18-month-old Mohammed Malakia has no problems anymore. And they will continue to fight over sand. Reminds me of something Robert Mistrelia wrote in an email a little bit earlier this evening where he said, Australia has a number of immigrants. A number of immigrants from the Middle East, from those countries, and I'm paraphrasing Robert here, where anyone with any sense at all would try to get out. Some people would rather stay and die. I remember, it's another one of those I miss Bart Cop moments. Bless his heart. Terry would write again and again and again, wouldn't you rather see your children grow up than fight over sacred sand?
Here then, a few, just because maybe their names deserve mention somewhere. These are the dead of Gaza. And hey, hey America, you helped pay for killing them. Aren't you proud? Yeah, we're going to fire up the Lee Greenwood and God bless the USA again. But then again, those of us who have deeply held religious convictions against slaughtering people, well, we don't count. Now, if you've got a deeply held religious conviction about a woman's reproductive organs, by God, the Supreme Court will move heaven and earth to protect your fantasies. But if you would rather not help pay for the Israeli military to butcher an 18-month-old, well, shut the up and sit down, citizen. It's just the price you pay. Mohammed Sharaban, 24, was killed in a bombing of his car in Gaza City. Ahmad Shaban, 30, died in the same bombing. Qadir al-Bashliki, 45, died in the same bombing. Rashad Yassin, 27, was killed in a bombing of the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. Yeah, that's right, they're bombing the refugees. Riyad Mohammed Kawara, 50, was killed in a bombing of his family's home in Khan Yunis. Siraj Ayed Abed Al-Alal, 8, was wounded in the same bombing and succumbed to his injuries on Tuesday evening. Mohammed Ayman Ashur, 15, died in the same bombing. Bakr Mohammed Judah, 22, died in the same bombing. Amar Mohammed Judah, 26, died in the same bombing. Hussein Youssef Kawara, 13, died in the same bombing. And you helped pay for it. No, don't you run away. Oh, no. We got to own this. That filthy pig, Pastor Hagee, starve! And his queefy organization, you know, Christians United for Israel, they helped pay for this. They encouraged this. They sit around licking their fangs, waiting for the blood to run as high as the knees of a horse, just like it says in the Revelations, so that Jesus will come back. Musa Habib, 16, from Gaza City, was killed along with his 22-year-old cousin while the pair were riding a motorcycle. Muhammad Habib, 22, was killed with Musa Habib. I remember Hussein Youssef Kawara, 13, died in the same bombing. The same bombing that killed Siraj Ayad Abed Al-Alal, 8. Well, Basim Salim Kawara, 10 years old, died in the same bombing. You helped pay for that one, too. And Musa Habib and Muhammad Habib and Sakhar Aish Al-Ajuri, Ahmad Nail Mehdi, Hafiz Muhammad Hamad, Ibrahim Muhammad Hamad, Mehdi Muhammad Mahad. And those are just Tuesday. Then there's Wednesday, 24 years old, 80 years old, 60 years old, 31 years old, 13 years old. And then there's little Muhammad Makia, 18 months. Died with his mama, probably in her arms. 28 years old, 22 years old, 40 years old. Ibrahim Masri, 14, son of Sahar Hamdan, killed in the bombing. Samud al-Nawasra, a mommy, killed in a bombing along with her four-year-old, Muhammad Khalaf al-Nawasra, 4 years old, who was described as arriving at the hospital, and these are quotes, in shreds. Nidal Khalaf al-Nawasra, a child of unreported age, died along with Muhammad and Samud, Muhammad arriving at the hospital in shreds. Some of these we don't even know their ages.
That's Wednesday. Then Thursday. Thirty-three years old, 35 years old, 27 years old, 30 years old. Oh, look, here's Abdullah Ramadan Abu Ghazal, 5 years old, killed in a bombing in Beit Lahia. Yeah, let's step back from that whole God bless America thing and maybe, if you're of the believing persuasion, fall on your knees and beg God to forgive us for funding this, for paying for this. Undying shame upon us. Robert Nostrell, you're writing in. I'm going right to the phone in a moment. Subject line, the Green Berets. Robert says, God, I hate that film. I've sat through the whole thing once in a kind of stunned, what the silence. It still pops up every so often on afternoon TV. Goodness knows what anyone under 40 years of age makes of it. Vietnam is where high school kids now go to celebrate finishing high school. The other John Wayne film I dislike is the one set in Hawaii, early 1950s, where he's tracking down evil communists. It ends with a roll call of poor young kids being shipped off to Korea. I can only watch that one by taking it as a comedy. It's full of errors. You can see overhead mics and the film crew reflected in just about anything shiny. P.S. Anyone with any sense and the ability to get out would be the ones... anyone with any sense and the ability to get out would. The ones who can't get out, at least try to send their children. Let's do go to the phones. Will in Chicago is with us. Hey, Will. Will? I just heard your microphone, Will. Oh, Will. Will, are you there? The call took a powder. Let's see if we get Will back. Are you there, Will? Hang on here. No, all my connections are solid. You hear me, I don't hear you, Will. Yeah, your mic's popping. All right, we're going to try to reconnect the call. Oh, by the way, thanks to Thomas. Thank you very much, Thomas. We are now only $45 away from meeting this evening's fundraising goal. That's a very big deal. We got 20 minutes to finish up in, and hopefully we will, so that tomorrow all we'll have to do is deal with our regular evening fundraising goal instead of, plus some. PayPal button, of course, is at headonradionetwork.com. Note coming in from Tim. Now this will happen. Anonymous. Hackers threaten Israel, I-S-R-A-H-E-L-L, cyber attack over Gaza. Israel already faces a million cyber attacks a day. Things might get worse before they get better, say experts. Okay. okay, maybe we've got Will back. Maybe we'll get Will this time. Will, do we have you? Dadgummit. I wonder what the problem is. Ah, there's Will. I heard you for a second. I heard a keyboard.
Okay. Now.
Yes.
I, for some reason, I unplugged the mic and it's working. I was going to say a very sobering introduction, and this shows why war is easy and peace is hard. And I believe that there is lots of blame to go around and missteps. But the point is, innocents are being killed, people are terrified, and I seriously wondered what if Rabin had been successful, or if Ehud Barak and Arafat had been successful in 2000, what that world would look like. But sadly, we have people who view their policy as more important than the wishes of their people, because every poll I've seen show a strong majority of Israelis and Palestinians supporting a negotiated peace agreement. But as you said about prohibition, all it takes is a few stubborn people who are loud and a bit of a plurality to make something awful happen. And this is, and as an observer, as someone who's Jewish and supports the right to two states and believes people do have the right to be secure in their own homes, some of the rhetoric I have found on the Israeli side to be absolutely vile, particularly those who have said, kill the Arabs. The burning alive of an Israeli Arab teenager as revenge for what happened to three boys is as evil as taking a teenager and killing him.
Yeah, let's understand that for what it was, Will. That was a lynching.
That was a lynching. And I mean, that it's been called that in the Israeli press, at least in Haaretz, which I recommend you that people read as a good source. But unfortunately, I view the last several Israeli prime ministers as failures. Sharon took action to evacuate Gaza, but that didn't settlements, but that didn't work. Ehud Barak and Arafat couldn't cut a deal, although Arafat later wished he had cut a deal when Sharon came in. And I think what is needed is action on the ground. The good thing is that there are people who, even in the midst of this, are trying to establish ties among both groups. There are people who believe that peace is possible. But right now, what we have is a situation where it looks like Hamas and Netanyahu's government have stumbled into a war, and it is not doing anyone any good. The only ones that stand to gain are those selling the military supplies. And I have to ask, if we had a government that would have pushed stronger for peace in the past, where would we be? It's not easy. No, solving a long-term conflict is not easy, but we've seen there can be...
It can be done. Look at Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland, that's 400 years of tension. And everyone had to concede things. For the IRA, they had to concede that they were not going to be concerned about liberating Ulster. The thing is, we generally know the steps that are needed. Most people agree on the broad outlines of a plan. The problem is having leaders who are capable and willing of taking those steps. I mean, Rabin had the courage, and sadly, he the sort of rhetoric that was used against John F. Kennedy in Dallas was also used against Rabin.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Several of those on the right calling him a Nazi, a traitor, and a few right-wing rabbis saying, well, he can't be a true Jew because he's willing to cut a deal. Never mind that the Torah has various definitions of the boundaries of Israel. Never mind that these would be to an ancient Israeli Ishmaelites and thus distant kinsmen rather than Canaanites who were never really wiped out, just vanished over time, over a period of centuries. But instead, we have had prime minister after prime minister not really pursuing peace. We had a Bush administration which really just tried to keep the process alive.
Remember, Will, it was in Israel that George Bush asserted that God told him to attack Iraq.
Yes, and here's my great problem with people using God as justification for their acts. Just like you began the show with, people who will use God or anything else to justify their abuse of others. There are those who will use God to justify power. And there are some elements of Israeli society, as well as Palestinian society, and those in the surrounding country and in our own, who are perfectly willing to use their faith or their belief system or to justify anything. And in the end, the innocent suffer. This is why the peace process has to be pursued. Now,
let me ask you a question, Will.
Yeah.
Would it make any difference in terms of leverage or enforcing some sort of coming to the table if the United States were to say to Israel, listen, the $3 billion check we write you every year, we're not going to write it until you take peace seriously, you take this two-state solution seriously?
That would work because here's the thing. A lot of that aid and a lot of our foreign aid period essentially goes into N1 checking account and then to the checking account of places like Northrop Grumman.
Right, and that's my point. We talk about the aid that we pass around the world, but aid should have quotation marks around it, Will, because it's a whole lot more guns than it is butter.
Well, look, if foreign aid was okay, we'll give money to companies researching on how to desalinate water and grow crops more easily in a changing climate, that would be good. But I think the sad thing is we have a situation where the U.S. can lead, but I don't think we have as much as I would like. And as for Netanyahu, my joke about him being prime minister is, although the first time when he was elected, the first time in this century, Likud party was actually behind Labor in the number of votes, but he cobbled together a coalition. His coalition is incredibly fragile, and his worst nightmare would be a third intifada. I mean, Netanyahu's popularity only seems to go up during wartime because he has been condemned by large segments of the Israeli public on his domestic policies. Meanwhile, I think one thing that we can understand is that people are rightfully frustrated on both sides of the border. The Palestinians in Gaza are very frustrated because their lives haven't improved. And Hamas is popular mostly because of one reason. They are social services. And
you know, you remind me of something, and just to throw a couple of things out there for consideration. One, Israel went after the PLO, and
yes,
the PLO morphed into the Palestinian Authority, right?
Right.
And then Israel crippled the Palestinian Authority, and they got Hamas. Now they're trying to cripple Hamas, and the one point that J.J. Goldberg makes in this article at the Forward is that what comes after Hamas, no matter how bad one may think Hamas is, and you know, Hamas is delivering services. They are, you know, within the biblical New Testament terms, they're feeding the sheep. Well, Hamas, what comes after them is going to be exponentially worse than anything Israel thought Hamas was. They are, the state of Israel is driving, is and has been for a very long time, the radicalization of Palestine.
Well, this is why we have to remember something Rabin said, that you make peace with unsavory enemies that you don't like. And guess what? No one is required to like each other, but if some agreement could be worked out, even though I'm sure there would not be, everything would be perfect afterwards, it'd be a darn sight better.
Well, what would happen, and I realize this is just fantasy and speculation, Will, and we're running out of time, but what would happen if by some means Israel could be convinced to walk away from all the settlements in the occupied territories, especially in the West Bank?
Well, most peace plans encourage factoring some into Israel itself, and there's generally a swap for land proposal. But one of the reasons why many people live in the settlements is not so much religious as they are subsidized. They are cheaper than living in Tel Aviv.
They're they're paid to live there.
Exactly. So if you were to subsidize housing in Tel Aviv, Haifa, Jerusalem, and other cities, that would work, and many would move. There will probably be some people who would be unwilling to move, so I think they would have to consider whether they want to renounce their citizenship and be citizens of a new state of Palestine. Most probably wouldn't. But I mean, it is.
What would happen if the subsidies in the settlements? What would happen if the subsidies were withdrawn?
Well, then many people would end up going to Israel proper. The thing is, we have many proposals outlining solutions. The problem is, the Israelis have a government right now which really hasn't seemed to pursue peace strongly, to put it as mildly as humanly possible. The Palestinians have been divided amongst themselves, and I think that there are enough people willing to make things work, to make adjustments and agreements. The problem is the political will. And I'm afraid I can't see Netanyahu having that Rabin moment of being...
Well, let's just be straight up. Benjamin Netanyahu does not have the courage for peace.
No,
peace is a function of courage. And he is, and where peace is concerned, Benjamin Netanyahu is a coward.
Because I'm getting called, so let me wish everyone a good night. And remember, the horn subsists on your donations. Nothing comes easy. Let's, including the horn, and let's hope for peace.
Indeed. Thank you, Will. Our buddy Will in Chicago. But that's true. A man who will not have peace is at heart a coward. And Benjamin Netanyahu will not have peace. Because it's bad. Peace is bad for Benjamin Netanyahu's power. Also noted in the J.J. Goldberg article at the Forward, the last 7 years have been the most peaceful 7 years in the entire existence of the State of Israel since 1948.
rocket attacks were way down. Bombings way down. It almost looked like there was some sort of a road towards some degree of normality. So necessarily, that had to end. Yeah. So, lo and behold, the 3 hours have flown by once again. Yeah, Irish Dave pointing out, you make peace with the enemies you have right after you break their arms and legs. Because, see, that's the essential problem, isn't it? Israel says, we'll stop killing Palestinians when Hamas stops shooting. And the Palestinians say, we'll stop shooting when Israel stops bombing 18-month-olds. And both sides then have preconditions for a cessation of hostilities that are impossible. Everybody has to stop all at once. And I wish to God, well, you know what that means. I wish we had the courage in this country to say, okay, the money faucet just got turned off. Sorry. And you know what? You would see things begin to change. So, yeah, the 3 hours has once again flown by. I hope this has been kind of a tough thorn in the side Thursday. I'm sorry it wasn't particularly funny or humorous or jocular. But sometimes the world isn't. A lot of the time, the world isn't. But thank you, one and all, for joining into the conversation in any way in which you participate. I treasure your communication and your emails, your comments to Twitter and your Facebook postings. And all of it goes into the larger idea that is conversation. Thank you for your support of the horn and keeping the horn on the air. Thank you to George and Asa. Thank you to Dwayne. Thank you to Beth. Thank you to Thomas. We have $45 to go to finish off fundraising for this evening. Hopefully that will happen in fairly short order, and we'll start with a clean slate tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Our hearts especially go out to Sparky this evening upon the passing of his father after a long life well-lived. Thank you to our other chat room moderators, Lottie and Texas Betsy. Thank you to our News Ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.